Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. My name is MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me in another episode of the Cashflow Ninja and spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. Do me a huge favor. If you appreciate what we're doing here and you're enjoying this, the show, smash us a like below on the platform that you're watching this. Share this with everyone that you know, because you know they'll enjoy it. And if you're listening to this on a podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review our show. This will help more people find the show. Now, enough of that. To my guest today, I have another fantastic show with another fantastic guest, Bill Hamm. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me.
For folks not familiar with you and what you do, could you please share a little bit about your background and journey with them?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm in multifamily. Been in real estate for about 15 years now. Started off in single family. My very first deal was a duplex, kind of was a pilot, walked away from aviation with the duplex. Flipped some houses, got going, learned to use creative financing and other things to build a real estate portfolio. Almost 16 years later now, I've had several thousand units, own a management company, been doing this for a long time. Don't always do creative financing, but I wrote a book recently. Since I've been through all of the market cycles, I know what's coming, and I know I can read the signposts, right? And I go, oh, when these things occur, these things are gonna occur. And so from experience, I kind of know where we're at in the world as far as the market is concerned and where we're going. And something that's going to be of a lot of value to people going forward over the next, I'll say, 6 months to 3 or 4 years is going to be creative financing. Largely what we see, lenders pull back. You know, when we kind of start heading into that recession, lenders just don't lend as readily and as aggressively. And so there's just less money to buy real estate. And when a seller has a problem, something that may be a distressed asset, something that's not performing exactly as it should, you go to get a loan, the bank says, hey, we're not interested. How do you get these deals done? Creative financing. And that's why I'm bringing the book out now. And hopefully help us all do some more real estate going forward.
No, very timely. And that's why I was excited to have you on and chat about this. Let's talk a little bit about the market cycle and your thoughts of where we are today. Obviously, we've had a very interesting year and a very interesting start to this year. Where do you think we're at? And what are some of the things that you look for as indicators of identifying where we are in stages of the market cycle?
Yeah, so a lot of answers there. There are four different basic market phases. That's sort of the expansion, the peak, the recession, the trough. And it's just kind of like a wave up and down. And that speaks to the economy, as well as maybe cities, even industries like multifamily versus single family, things like that. So nationally speaking, economically speaking, and sort of multifamily speaking, real estate speaking, I think we've kind of gone over the top of the market cycle, and I believe we're headed into a recession cycle, a down cycle, for a whole lot of reasons. And actually, COVID's not even one of the main reasons that I think we're going to head into this recession. I think COVID is going to accelerate some of those issues, but not necessarily the cause. It's just time for the market to cycle in general. And the markers, if you want to look, the absolute main marker, debt. Just watch lenders. As lenders start to pull back, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like the lenders kind of look forward and they say, oh, I think we're going to go into a recession. So they stop lending. So we go into a recession. It's like, okay, great. So debt always drives the economy. And so when debt kind of retreats, we go into that down cycle session. And that's what I'm pointing out right now. Look at Fannie, look at Freddie. They've due to COVID, they've got us putting up a year's worth of principal, interest, taxes, insurance. Yeah, all right, that's not the end of the world. Yep, but now they're really relying heavily on resume. So if you want to go get a Fannie or Freddie loan, you've got to have a lot more experience these days. They're looking for you to have more net worth. It's what we call a flight to quality. And so as they have this flight to quality to protect themselves, it just makes less money in the world. And so that's the main indicator that we're going to go into a sort of downturn. That being said, I can add one more to it. And this this is one that I think is way bigger than COVID and got way more to do with what's coming up in the future than politics or the left or the right or any of this stuff. Aging assets. A large bulk of our affordable housing in America is getting very old. The buildings are just getting old. You know, if you own multifamily or you own real estate and it's more than 50 years old, if it was built in the 60s and 70s, you're probably fixing the plumbing. A lot. You're probably fixing roofs a lot. You've probably got soft flooring. Maybe if you're on crawl space, you've had all that moisture into those buildings for the last 50 years. The problem is all of those apartments, which are our affordable housing product in America, is getting to the point where it's just going to cost too much to fix it. It's just going to be too expensive. Your CapEx, your capital expense is just going to be too high, and it's not going to make profit. It's not going to be profitable to go over there and deal with it. That concerns me. And that's what I'm kind of looking at a lot of these old buildings. I'm an operator. I'm out here on the street running these properties every single day. I'm looking at our own repairs going, well, you know, what is a building worth if you strip all the plumbing out and replace it? I mean, that's tough. And if you look at today's prices and then you add on top of today's prices, all of the repairs and maintenance that that property may need in the future, you're upside down on value before you even bought the property. That's concerning to me. What are we going to do about all these old buildings?
That's right. That's right. Old buildings and money drying up, right?
Right. It's a double whammy. Yeah.
So in times of, as you learned during the last one, when the money runs out, you got to get creative. And you talk about creative cash, creative strategies, and how to create creative financing structures and deals to get the deals done. What are some of the things that you can share with our listeners and our audience with regards to creative financing strategies?
Yeah, absolutely. The two major, there's lots of different strategies we can use. The two major strategies you're going to encounter the most often are seller financing and master lease options. Those are the two major ones. Outside of those two, you're getting into like partnerships with sellers, using lines of credit, debt partners such as hard money lenders and different things. There's lots of different strategies, but the major ones are either getting a seller to act as the bank and finance the property, or you're going to, if the seller has a lease or has a mortgage in place, you want to do a master lease option, which in short is a rent to own. You know, what a master lease option does is it allows me to go in and rent an entire property, which, by the way, it's the same thing as a lease to own. In multifamily, or when we're dealing with lots of units, we just call it a master lease option. It's still lease option. It's like rent own. I'm going to rent your entire property with the right to sublet to the tenants. And so that gives me control of the cash flow. That gives me control of the property. That'll allow me to fix the thing up if it's distressed without having to buy it. And then you and I are going to set a price. We're going to agree on a price today, and we're going to agree on an amount of time in which I'm the only person that can buy the property for that price. So with the master lease option, I'm controlling the cash flow and the operations, and then I'm controlling the future sale. So the idea is you obviously want to get something that you can make more valuable than the price you've agreed. So if you and I agree on a price of $1 million, hopefully I can go in there and make that property worth $1.5 million or $2 million, but I've still locked that price in at $1 million. And so that's a lease option, master lease option, a basic seller financing, roughly what it sounds like. Seller's acting as the bank. You're probably still putting some money down, but you're not going to a lender and qualifying. This is not being, you know, and right now is about where most people go, yeah, hold on, I tried that once. Wait, I remember about 2 years ago, I tried to do a thing and the lease option, it didn't work. Right. It's very specific to needs. It's very specific to problems. If the market is going really well, people don't really have very many problems. Creative financing doesn't work that well. You know, why would you seller finance that deal to me when you can just stick it on the market and get asking price or more? You won't. You'll just sell it. Well, that is why this book is coming out now, because it's techniques that are going to work going forward, where they work in all market cycles. They just work less in a really hot economy. They work great in not such a hot economy. So if you think we're going into a great economy, don't buy my book and don't use creative financing, because you're going to be awesome in 2021. If you're not so sure about that comment and you think we might be going into a little bit of a questionable economic cycle, you're going to want to brush up on some creative financing techniques.
Can you provide a framework for a seller financing and how to structure this? What situations might people run into? where they can take this framework then and apply that?
Yeah. So you, one, it's too broad a question to be able to give a tremendous amount of detail on. But basically what you want to do is to create a problem solving offer. And that's the kind of the key, whether it's seller financing or lease options or anything, you got to bring value. You have to be valuable. You have to bring some value to the seller. Why are they going to do business with you? So the key is to analyze the deal. What are the problems? Create an offer that solves those problems. All right. So like seller financing, like you're asking specifically, you're going to give on the price, but take on the terms. All right. So you're probably going to have to agree to at or around what the seller's asking for. Yeah, but you're going to clobber them on the terms. And that means interest rate, maybe interest only payments for a while, maybe very little money down, maybe defer. One of my favorite things to do, two favorite things, and I'll give your listeners some tips. One, if it's a property that needs some work and you can get seller financing, try and push off several payments. The first maybe 90 days worth of payments. You can put them to the back end. So it's not like you're getting it for free. You just want to be able to go in and operate that property for maybe 90 to 120 days with no payments to the seller. And what you can do is you can use whatever revenue the property produces to fix up its own units. I've done that a ton of times. Another thing you could do is if you're going to do seller financing or even a lease option, and the property needs a fair amount of work, and you've got to bring this cash to the table, try and swap out a down payment with using that cash to do the repairs. So for example, if you're going to do seller financing with me, I may say, hey, MCI, I want to, I'm going to put out $100,000, but at the same time, you've got $100,000 worth of work to do to your property. Tell you what, I'm going to take this $100,000 and put it in escrow. You can see it. I can see it. We know it's there, but I'm going to use that money to fix up your property instead of giving you a big down payment and then needing even more cash to come in and fix the property up. See, I want to swap out. You know, I got skin in the game because I'm fixing up, I'm spending money on your property. Hey, if you take that property back, it's going to be in much better shape than when I gave it to you. It's a win-win. You know, so that's a way that I think a lot of times you can convince a seller to do seller financing, as well as fixing up a property and limiting the amount of cash you bring to the table.
Yeah, so you're going to have a conversation and figure out what their desired situation is, because you have a desired situation, they have a desired situation, and between the two of you, you can figure out how you both can get to the same outcome in your desired situation. And you just mentioned, you know, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for this type of creative financing, because you already touched on one: old buildings. So somebody would say, well, why would somebody do seller financing? Well, they want to get rid of the building because it's old and they don't want to fix it up. Maybe they're, a part of the demographic that's ready to retire. They're like, I'm ready to retire. I'm not ready to fix up a building right now that's old. Maybe that was their retirement. You know, maybe there's a lot of real estate investors in that demographic that's like, this is my retirement. I'm selling this, and this is basically the money that I'm going to live on. Maybe the property is just a dog and they haven't figured out how to make it work, and they were waiting for someone with the knowledge and the skill sets and the street smarts like yourself to come around and figure out how to solve that problem, right?
Yeah, burned out landlord, my favorite. It's not that the property is in bad shape or anything like that. The landlord is just tired of toilets and trash and tenants, and they just don't want to deal with it anymore. That's a great lease option strategy right there. You know, you come in, you take it over, you take over their headache, you take over the management. They get to go away. You send them a check. Yeah, I love a good old burned out landlord. Like I said, somebody ready to retire, somebody just doesn't want to deal with it anymore, and they're looking for somebody to just pass the torch on to and collect a check or to get paid out. Maybe to your point, in the second best scenario, seller who ran out of money. Got a property, maybe it's a little older, it needs some repairs, they're fresh out of cash and they don't know what to do. And because that property needs these repairs, the lender isn't giving you a very good loan to value. The lender says, hey, you know, for that property, we can only lend you 65% or 60%. And you're doing the math. Well, wait a minute. If I'm bringing 35, 40% down payment and fixing up the building and, there's no cash flow here. Why would I do that? Well, you wouldn't. Well, now you don't buy the property. The seller doesn't get to sell. We're all stuck in the middle and nobody makes any money. creativity. That's the answer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can see that there's a lot of that going. Another idea that came to mind too was, you know, the real estate industry is ripe for disruption with technology. So again, you have older landlords and now you can come in with a different set of skill set, perhaps, that can market and actually find tenants, because there's going to be competition for tenants that can pay folks. I could see that coming. And there's unfortunately a lot of landlords that's going to sit with an issue with, there's going to be a lot of folks unable to pay rent. So are you going to be the person that has a unique skill set that can go into a place where they're having a problem with occupancy or with late payments or with non-payments to turn that around and actually attract the right type of tenant to that building that you then acquire through creative financing?
Hey, you hit on something. You said tenants not being able to pay rent. I'm literally on my other screen looking at an article put out by CNBC today. Nearly 20% of renters in America are behind on their rent payments. That is an article they put out today. Nearly 20% of America is behind. Hey, look, I'm looking at rent rolls. I'm analyzing deals. They're not kidding. I'm seeing it on the rent roll. We got a real problem coming. A lot of tenants aren't going to be able to pay their rent. How are we going to solve this problem? You know, the seller wants to sell. Lenders don't want to lend on a property that isn't economically stable. What do we do here? We're going to have to meet in the middle.
Yep. That's it, folks. You heard it here first, right? Hot off the press.
But
that's,
yeah, right, yeah.
That's kind of crazy, though. 22%.
20%. Yeah. Yeah. 20% right now. Yeah. And it, a lot of the deals that I'm looking at, one of the big things, and if you guys are analyzing deals, one of the biggest tips I can tell you right now, go straight for the rent roll. Don't even worry about that profit and loss. Don't even worry about any detail. Don't worry about any of that stuff. Go get a rent roll and see if the tenants are paying rent. Because if these tenants are all behind in their rent, you know, God bless them, you're not going to be able to get a loan. You're not going to get a mortgage. You know, if you take that deal into Fannie or Freddie and say, here, give me a mortgage, 20% of the tenants aren't paying rent today. It's a joke, right? You're not going to get a mortgage on that. Not going to happen. You got to watch that debt service ratio. It gets below 1.2, you're dead in the water. And right now, with 20% of renters not paying their rent, we're barreling towards that number. And there's going to be a lot of issues. I don't know how everybody's going to solve them. I know how I'll solve them. But yeah, I think that's why I think creativity in real estate is going to be hallmark for especially new people getting into the business. You know, if you're a giant multi-millionaire, you're out there. Look, I'm not talking to you. The rest of us, you know, who are getting into the business, new to the business, may not have a ton of money to get into the business. You're having a hard time finding deals right now. You're struggling to get something closed. These are the techniques that are going to help you out over the next year or so.
Yeah. And if you think about this number too, right, 22%. And right now, I mean, we're still on the front end of this. This is not even in the middle of this, you know, it's still like the wave is coming and it's.
I'm afraid that it is. Yeah. I'm afraid that it is coming. I agree with you. 4 months ago, we thought, well, rent cliff, here it comes. And then we waited and it didn't happen. And we thought, oh, okay, well, maybe we're good. No, it was just delayed. Here it comes. We braced for impact a little early. It's coming right now.
And of course, people were negotiating. You know, the great operators and the property managers were trying to get ahead of this and saying, hey, there's something coming down the line. I mean, how long can folks sustain this? Just think about, you know, the average person there that would rent. You had like lockdowns and economies basically shut down, you know, by the end of last year for almost 9 months. And what did they get? You know, $1,200 or, you know, one. That's not going to solve that problem.
That's not helping anybody. I mean, it is, but it isn't, you know.
No. So, you know, so they had to get ahead of this and negotiate and make concessions and work with folks to get through this. And you're going to run out of wiggle room with that too, right?
Right. You know, and if they send us all $1,200, you know, stimulus check, that's wonderful. Yeah. But if you're $4,000 or $5,000 behind in rent, giving the landlord that $1,200 is a waste of your money. Keep it. Don't even bother. You know, it's not going to get you anywhere. So unless the government is sending out $5,000 or $10,000, which we know they're not, I don't know that that's going to be a whole lot of a solution. You know, it's unfortunate. I just don't know what it is.
And it's still, I think, what is it now? The evictions and they just paused something on that too. So it's pushed out another couple of months. So eventually.
Correct. The eviction moratorium has been extended even further. Yeah. So we'll see. I think there's going to be some distress coming down the line soon. It's going to be a little tough if you're an operator. It's going to be a great opportunity if you're a buyer.
So at what point would you look at the seller, the creative seller financing versus the master lease option? What would be the difference between those two that, you know, that you would use the one over the other?
Whether the seller has a mortgage or not. The seller cannot give you financing if they themselves have financing. They can't give interest they don't have. So if they have a mortgage, they really can't give you a mortgage. Now, we can do what people call subject to or a wrap, where you just kind of say, hey, I'm going to make the payment to the bank for you. And we just won't tell the bank and they really won't care. I think that's pretty risky business. I would suggest you do a lease option in that scenario, as opposed to just not telling the bank. So that's really it. If the seller has a mortgage, they can't give you financing. They can do a lease option. If the seller has full equity, then they can do real seller financing. Because remember, in seller financing, you're going to go through a closing. You're going to record the deed. Your name's on it. The seller's just acting like the bank. You're the new owner. And if you didn't pay the seller, they would have to go through a foreclosure process just like a lender.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, there's a lot of stuff happening for someone that's new in multifamily and starting right now. What would be some of the things that, kind of like a playbook that you would give them to enter in this specific period of time? Because besides learning all the things that they can in the book, it's going to be a pretty interesting time. You know, there's going to be folks that seize on the opportunity and build an amazing portfolio and capitalize on it. And then obviously there's the other side of it.
Yeah. If you're new to the business, I would give you probably some pretty general advice. And it's the kind of advice I give everybody. Look, I can tell you everything you need to know about real estate, one sentence. Know the values in the area, look at more deals than everybody else. Real simple. So you have to know what stuff's worth. If you don't know what stuff's worth, how are you going to know if it's a good deal or not? You're not going to know whether you're overpaying, underpaying, it's a good deal. All right, so first step is you must know the values in the area, in your market. And then once you know what something's worth, you just got to outwork everybody else. You just got to look at more deals in your competition. It's real simple. Everything that we can discuss, any advice anybody can ever give you will fall under that sentence one way or the other. So it really breaks the world down, or the real estate world down, into two parts. One, deal analysis. Two, deal flow. So if you're new to this business, I would spend a tremendous amount of time educating yourself on deal analysis. It's the absolute most important part. You got to know what stuff's worth. You got to know what you're looking at. And then you got to really get your deal flow going. Right now, deals are hard to find. So you just got to bring in lots and lots of deals to get to those few that do make sense. And that's what creative financing is for, by the way. It's not, I don't want anybody listening to go out and say, well, I'm going to do lease option deals, or I want to do seller financing deals. No. Those are just tools. You analyze a deal just like you're going to buy it, just like you would any other day. If for whatever reason the numbers don't work, instead of throwing in the trash and saying, hold on, let's pull out a few of these other techniques, see if those change anything. If any of my techniques plus yours don't change anything, yeah, then it's a bad deal. Throw it away. All I'm saying is, hey, these other techniques can increase probability. That's all. You know, the only tool you have is to go down to the bank, borrow 80%, put down 20%, and buy the property, a very small amount of real estate deals will fit that. You got one tool. It's like the old saying goes, hey, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. You're just hitting the same thing all the time with the same tool. I'm saying, here, have a few extra tools and try a few of these out if that one doesn't work. If none of them work, yeah, don't do the deal. But we're just going to increase probability.
Yeah, and in times where there's a lot of chaos too. I mean, it's the folks that can solve problems that are gonna come out ahead. Let's talk a little bit multifamily in general. So some of the markets that you're in, you're down in the Peach State. But what type of markets do you look in and invest in? And what are some of the markets that are attractive?
I personally am looking in the southeastern area, you know, several states around Georgia, southeast. That's just because that's where I'm at. And I don't feel like flying to Texas or wherever else. You know, I think right now the hottest part of the market, or the hottest part of the country, is going to be Phoenix, Arizona, over to sort of Atlanta, Charlotte, North Carolina area. It's what we call the smile. So if you kind of imagine a smile running across the bottom of the country there from Phoenix to Georgia, that's kind of your belt. The southern strip there is where all the population is going. People are moving away from the northern states to the southern states. So I think if you're in a major market in one of those areas, you're probably all right. What I would be careful about is and something I've seen a lot of people doing lately, be careful about chasing yield. Be careful about going further and further and further out to these little towns and these little cowpoke areas because you believe you're going to get cash flow out there. Those are the areas that get left behind first. So I would say try and stay as close to your major metro areas as you can. I understand pricing is certainly high in those areas, but long term, you're safer there. So I'd say if you're in the bottom half of the country, sort of in one of those metro areas, you're in the best market. Now, if you're not in those areas, I'm not saying get out of real estate and run for the hills. I'm just saying those are the best areas.
Yeah. And Phoenix is certainly getting a lot of folks from states, even such as California, right?
A lot of people coming out of California. That place is either it's the taxes, the weather, the fire, or the homeless people, you know, whatever the combination. Hey, and if we're talking about New York, we're talking about taxes and landlord laws. So there's, you know,
Illinois.
You go up the middle, up to Chicago, we're talking about crime. You know, so a lot of these different areas have reasons that they're pushing that demographic sort of to a southern market. Besides Atlanta, Atlanta's just awesome in general. So besides that.
It's going to be interesting too. I mean, there's a lot of different trends, the way that we work.
They are.
The way that people travel, the fourth industrial revolution is in full swing with AI, robotics, the Internet of Things, 5G, all these things. So it's going to be interesting to see it. Plus mass migration too. I mean, huge migration in the United States. And this seems to be a trend that's pretty much global too in different countries and on different continents where folks are moving from one area to another for many different reasons, like you listed, whether it's tax, cost of living, freedom, insert year, reason.
Right. Agreed. Yeah, completely agreed. Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't overthink it too much. You know, don't slice the pie too thin. Just get out there and take action. You can really overthink things. You can really worry about this and worry about that and worry this. Look, just go look at a deal. Just go look at deals. Just go underwrite. Go talk to realtors. Deal flow. That's all anybody needs to be worried about. You know, I see so many new students, people new to the business, running around and touching all these different things because it makes them feel like they're accomplishing something when they're usually not. You know, I a lot of team building. Oh, I got to build my team. You got a deal? What you building a team for? You don't need a team. You need a deal. Go get a deal. Oh, I need an accountant. I need an attorney. No, you need a deal. Go get a deal. So that's what I kind of tell all my students is, look, just turn off all that white noise and go look at some deals. That's the only thing you can control. All this other stuff, you can't control it, so don't worry about it. But you can control how much effort you put in. You can't control that.
Yep, the chicken or the egg. What comes
first? There you go, right, yeah. Start with the education chicken, and it will lay a real estate egg. There you go. We'll go that route.
Awesome. One habit I've observed from wealthy and successful people is that they're always studying new things, they're learning. What are some of the things you're studying right now and some of the things you're trying to master?
Yeah, I mean, let's see. I got that book. I'm sitting here. I got that book. I got that one. I didn't know you were going to ask that question either. I got that book. I know all I'm doing is reading, constantly reading, study, constantly. My personal, I wake up every single morning, 2 cups of coffee in the Wall Street Journal. That's my personal morning routine. And then, I'm constantly studying, constantly reading personal education, just personal development. I just like to read and study all the time, anything from hobby related stuff to business. It's not always just about money. I read and study all kind of stuff that I enjoy. But yeah, I agree with you completely. You need to be word for the day. You need to be autodidactic. I mean, self-taught. You need to be a very autodidactic. I love that word. I never actually get to use it in a sentence. So I'm just pulling out my 50-cent words. But you got to be autodidactic. Teach yourself. Don't wait for somebody to come along and kick you into gear. Look, you know, a book's $20. You know what I mean? You go on a podcast. You can go on all kind of places and read stuff. I'm not talking about spending big money on coaching programs. Yes, those are good. I'm talking about cheap information. Just go immerse yourself in information. It's the way.
There's so much info out there right now and great podcasts just like this one.
Exactly.
But there's so much information out there. These guys is really, I mean, you can dive into and try to master whatever you, whatever you're into. I mean, I have a question. I just look it up on the internet, on YouTube or whatever video channel folks are using.
Yeah, and you're a young guy. And I remember you used to have to go down and check out the encyclopedia at the library. So at least you don't have to do that. I mean, you know, I can understand if you had to physically go down to the library, get a book off the shelf. Look, just log in. All of man's knowledge is a mouse click away. No excuse. None.
It's unbelievable. I remember when I first came to the United States about 20 years ago, and I would have to go down to like a corner shop, a 7-Eleven, you know, and buy like a calling card and call my parents. And then you're like 3 minutes in and it's like, you know, there's a beep going and then the card's done. Then you got to run. You got to get another card. Now it's like I pick up my smartphone and I'm like, hey, mom, dad, what's going on?
Yeah, hi,
talking to them. They're in, you know, South Africa. And we're chatting to each other, you know, through our phone for free. You know, using certain types of apps. So it's just, yeah, we literally have Star Trek technology at our fingertips these days. Most of it is free. So really no excuse not to get started. Now, core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations, and we're only allowed to pass on three principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
All right. I would say number one, always have something to trade. That's my financial advice. Always have something to trade, which what I'm really saying is learn how to be valuable. If you don't bring value to a situation, just leave the situation. You can't be valuable to every situation all the time, to everybody. But figure out where you can be valuable and where you bring you know, something special to an event or to a person or to a scenario and really focus there. So always have something to trade, which means be valuable. Two, I would say success doesn't always have anything to do with money. You know, I think a lot of times ambition is overrated. You know, you don't always have to try and conquer the world, you know? So, I mean, get to a level that you find that you're comfortable and don't let society pressure you into thinking you need to earn more and be more and take over more. Who cares? Like me, I'm not the wealthiest guy in the world, but man, I'm really enjoying my free time. You know what I mean? I spend my money in freedom. I get to work or not work or do whatever. That's freedom. So don't always confuse success with money. I think those can go hand in hand, but they don't have to. Thirdly, what would I say to somebody in the future? I don't know. Take action. Yeah, you got to be action oriented. You know, be ready to fail. I think that's what I think we have a misunderstanding of failure in America, an ego-based concept of failure. You know, I think we've seen that in some of the administration lately, no comment, but, you know, I think people are too afraid to fail. And that's probably one of the biggest failures that you can commit is not being willing to fail. So you got to be willing to try, you got to be willing to fail, you got to be, you know, ready to get out there. For example, I would give everyone this tip, and I'll ask you this question. What is the definition of insane? What do you think the definition of insane is? Go ahead, just off the top of your head.
Just doing the same thing over and over.
That's what everybody says, expecting a different result. That's what everybody says. Number one, that's a meme. Look up the definition of insane. That's not it.
Yeah.
What's the definition of practice? Doing the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah.
And so you not only expect a result, but you get one. So are you telling me practice is insane? Ooh, we got to stop that point of view. So that's what I want everybody. If I'm going to leave something for the future, it's probably going to be that one right there. Stop thinking that practice is insane. Stop saying that when somebody says, hey, what's insanity? Oh, it's doing the same thing over and over until you get it. No, that's practice. Practice is not insane. So you got to be willing to sit there and do the same things over and over and over, demanding a different result and doing them until you get one. That is not insane. It's practice. So if anybody ever asks you or anybody out there listening, you ever hear somebody say, insanity is doing the same thing. Just choke them right there. Just reach out and grab them and go, no, it's not. No, it's not. So that's what I would leave for the future. Practice is not insane.
No, that's great. I love it. Love it. Where can people learn more about you? Where can they follow you? And where can they grab a copy of your book to add some more tools to their tool belts?
Absolutely. Well, you can reach out to me directly, bill@gobroadwell.com. That's my email. It is Broadwell Property Group. Broadwell.com or GoBroadwell.com. Either one of those work. That's our website. If you want to do, if you want to invest with me or my partners and find out more about us, Broadwell.com. And then if you want to get the book, that's going to be, it's Creative Cash. That's going to be on Amazon come February 9th, 2021. So Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. Books on all three of those. And if you want the book or you want an accompanying home study course that I have with it, that's at creativeapartmentdeals.com. So I really recommend go to creativeapartmentdeals.com. We have a master class that you can download there. You can get the book there. You can contact me there. So yeah, either of those two works just fine. Hey, got any thoughts, comments, questions, email me. Love to hear them.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for
that. Hey, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And thank you so much for providing your knowledge and your experience and sharing some pretty powerful information. And for the folks out there watching and listening to us, thank you so much for spending your most valuable resource, your time with us once again on the show. Please leave us a comment below. Tell us what you think of the show, and please give us a like, give us a share, and please leave us a rating and review on the podcast medium that you're consuming us on so that more people can find us. Also, if you're looking to learn banking principles and how you can become your own banker, we have a free video series that you could check out at yourownbankingsystem.com. As always, my friends, until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.